She's only in a little blue frock.
1939, when the war started. What are your memories of the start of the war?
Well, it didn't seem to affect people so much, except every time you went to town, there's recruiting officers down the street, four or five of them. You walk down the street and say, what about joining the army? We want some in this, some in there, and all this. And then at night time, you go to the picture theatre, you go to the movies, and they'd have a recruiting office there as you go into the picture theatre, and then selling war bonds also. But the minute you got away from town here, you didn't know what the civilian life was doing or anything. It didn't seem to affect them that much, but a lot of them were worried, I guess, about it. Because when Darwin was bombed, we knew all what happened up there. A lot of the civilians didn't know. They didn't want to know, because it would lose faith in everything.
Yeah, right.
Because they had to keep it quiet from civilians, everything like that. Like when the centre hall was sunk and when Darwin was bombed. And
so you didn't hear much? You just heard a little bit about the war in those early days?
Yeah, we didn't hear a lot, but we heard a lot more than the civilians heard, yeah. I think.
The question I've been always wanted to know, how come Fred didn't sign up for World War II or World
Dad
War
I? Dad was in the BDC.
What's that?
Volunteer Defence Corps.
Okay.
And they had the 310 rifles.
What's that?
Well, it's the same size piece of ammunition as the 303, and it hasn't got the same charge. You can use the same barrels in either. Because when I came out of the army, we were fitting barrels off 310s into 303s.
Oh, okay.
And Dad said they used to have a camp every so often. There was about 30 or 40 of them around, came Killinburn, and they used to all join up at weekends and go on a manoeuvre up in the hills and do a bit of practice shooting and do target shooting and all that. And they were a good little gun too. And I wouldn't mind one of those. 310, 310.
So that was World War II.
Yeah.
So Fred would have been in his 40s. So he would have been a bit old to serve.
Probably was.
Yeah. And you had a family and, you know, a lot of kids and, you know, had a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
What about World War I?
I wouldn't have a clue.
Because he was, World War I was 1914 to 1918, so he was 15 to 19 years of age during World War I. Do you know, have you any idea how come he didn't sign up for the last year or two?
Yeah.
I don't know if he was married.
Because he had the farm.
He had the farm.
Yeah.
He had responsibility.
And that's how Doug got out of the army, to go home and help him on the farm too.
Oh, okay. Okay, for World War II.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
See, you could get out and go home to,
if you had responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To help supply food for the soldiers and that.
Yeah. Okay. Why did you sign up?
Why did I?
Yeah.
Well, why did anyone join up?
Oh, grand adventure?
Well,
to learn a trade?
I thought, well, we either got to fight them here or fight them over there. So we might as well meet them halfway or something. So when we got to New Guinea and when we came back, I rejoined to go back with an LAD detachment. Then I signed up to go to the Philippines because I just wanted to go further.
Okay. You were 20 years old when you signed up originally.
Yeah.
Did both Doug and you sign up at the same time?
No. Doug would have been in before me because he was in the White Horse. When the war started, they did away with the horses and they had Bren gun carriers. And a Bren gun carrier. Might have been two or three. Was it three or four? The crew for a Bren gun carrier. And so then Doug went what I could gather. I could never find out much at all from June, whether she knew or not, I don't know. But Doug went to New Guinea, went to, from Moresby up. He was with engineers up there. Might have been telegraph lines or something.
Okay.
But see, after when I was in, saw radio then.
Well, like you said he went in as light horse originally, but...
Yeah, well then he went in as probably brigand carrier operator or...
Okay.
Or might have been infantry. Infantry battalion had Bryn guns, Bryn gun carriers. So Doug was probably in that. But I asked June a lot of times, like, what was Doug? And she says, oh, I don't know, Bill, I don't know. I don't know whether she didn't want to tell me or what.
She may not have never been told.
No, that's just right.
Yeah. When you decided to sign up at 20 years of age, did you sign up to do mechanicking? Is that what you signed on for?
I signed on as just as... Well, they put me, they said, you'll go into workshops.
Why?
Because you're a motor mechanic.
Ah, because you already had experience.
Yeah, that's what they said.
Okay.
So that was that.
Did that suit you?
Yeah, it didn't worry me. Yeah. I didn't want to go in as a captain or an officer or anything.
Right. Would you have gone in as an infantryman if they'd asked you to?
I suppose you'd have to, I think.
So you didn't care where, you just signed up?
Yeah. And, okay. They said, yeah, okay, you're a motor mechanic, you'll go to workshops. So
where did you do your initial training?
Kedron Park, Brisbane.
Oh, okay.
That's all the infantry training, rifle training and that, and marching. I had to go through all that, through the bull ring and a lot of that, and then you're posted then to wherever they want you.
Was there a shooting range at Kedron?
No shooting range there.
Where was the shooting range?
Oh, where?
Anogra?
It would be Anogra.
Okay. How long was training?
We were training for about a month, I suppose, and then we moved up to Stafford. We were in camp there for quite a while. And then we moved up to, got our vehicles. I drive a stores van. Had all the stores in it, clothing and food and everything. And I had another driver with me. And we all went by convoy up the coast to Rocky. And then we spent a night there. Then we went through to Emerald the next day and camped there a night under the bridge. And then the next day we headed off to Charters Towers. Up cross country. There's no road, so we just went through fences and everything, everywhere. And then we shot somebody's big, beautiful beast for food, cooked our own dinner that night, onions, potatoes in the ashes, and steak, barbecue, best meal I ever had.
Really?
And then we...
How many people in the convoy? How many men in the convoy?
Well, there was...
Talking about hundreds?
No, there was about 140 of us, I suppose. That was our workshop group and our field park group. They're the ones that supplied us with parts. And we all camped there together and we went to Charters Towers. And Charters Towers, I reckon, is the place of girls, goats and glass bottles. 3 G's. Anyway, we camped there a night. Then we headed off from there on to Townsville, which was classed as active service area. We were supposed to wear our respirators all the way, and there's no bitumen, it's all bulldust. And it was bloody awful dust. It was really dirty dust. When there were no officers around, we used to sneak the respirators off so that we could breathe easier. But we had to try to get used to wearing them. So we got to Stewart's Creek, yes, halfway to Townsville. And then we camped there and set up workshop there for, I suppose, about 2 or 3 months, I suppose.
How was the workshop set up? In tents or did you actually
have... No, we...
built sheds?
We put up timber structures. Yeah, we lived in tents. Mess hut. Okay, we put rails across the trees. And the kitchen was there. And then just scattered around everywhere, not in lines or anything, because that's easy targets.
Yeah, they can strafe them.
Yeah.
Strafe them, yeah.
So anyway, every morning you'd start the vehicle up and just check it, everything, see if everything's right, in case you've got to move out quickly. And see if it's full of POW, petrol, oil and water. And then, so we moved from there then to Bluewater Creek, the other side of Townsville, near Rolleston. A beautiful place, beautiful spot. Lovely swimming water holes and that. So we were there then for waiting for movement orders. So we got orders for so many vehicles to go to the wharf, to go on the boat. Mine was one of the rear guards. There was about four of us. We headed back, and the rest went to the wharf, and they went on the boat, and they were headed to Milne Bay. And, you know, we were there at the... Then they put us on the train to Cairns. So we were living in the high school there for a few weeks. And then they said, righto, down to the wharf. Well, the 20th of July, I was there, and that was my birthday, and we got an air raid at Townsville. No damage done or anything. They flew over, dropped a few bombs, and anyway, our planes chased them back and shot one of them down. So,
before you move on, what was it like being in an air raid?
Being what?
What was your first air raid like? What was the experience like?
Well, you're on edge a bit. I was on the guard duty that night and marching around with the rifle. I heard these planes, and the shop just up the road from us, it gets on the phone, air watch, air watch, air watch. And that gets straight through to Brisbane. Planes, bombers coming over. So air flash, that's the thing. Yeah. So I didn't bother getting in the trenches or anything, because I was just watching it sort of fly over. Then I heard the bombs going off at Townsville. Then I heard the planes coming back. And the other planes, I saw the trace of bullets firing between them, both planes, enemy and friendly ones. And that was it.
Did you see them shoot the plane down?
No, it was out in the sea.
Okay.
Somewhere.
Okay.
You got them.
So a little bit exciting, but not not bad.
No, it wasn't bad. So then the next day, that's right, we went to Cairns the next day, that's right, and in the high school there then, and then they ordered us to be ready to move next morning. So we went on to the boat the next morning, and we set off for Milne Bay. It's a trip that takes 2 to 3 days, normally. It took us 7 days to get to Milne Bay, because every night we'd want to get into Milne Bay, the Japs were in there shelling. Not peanuts.
No.
Shelling with ammo. And they were sinking boats up there and that. And we used to turn south then. We were in a convoy of 6 boats and a couple of corvettes as protection, supposedly. And they zigzag all the time. They don't keep a straight line. In case of submarine torpedoes. We headed north until near dark, then we had to turn south again. And so the next day, the same thing again. That went on for 7 days. And we eventually got into Milne Bay then.
So going to Milne Bay, you knew you were starting to go into the thick of it?
Yeah. We knew we were going to have a picnic.
Yeah.
And there was one boat laying there on the side, a boat with some of our trucks in it too. It was in there and it had got sunk. And after it was all over, we cut the side out of that boat, got a lot of the trucks out of it, took up to the workshops, hosed them down, washed them, As soon as we lifted the bonnet and hit the air cleaner, the whole carby fell off, fuel pump fell off because it was salt water, see? And it corroded.
Oh.
All corroded.
Even that quickly?
Yeah. But see, had they been washed straight out as rainwater, it might have been all right.
Yeah.
Anyway, we weren't worried. When we got into Millen Bay, we got in, there's no wharf, or there's wharfs there, but there was a boat there. We just drove up near the beach and we had petrol and bombs. They gave us May Wests in case you get shot out in the sea. But May Wests, they should have given us parachutes because had we got hit, we would have gone up. Parachutes and parachutes, petrol and bombs, we would have gone up.
A May West is a?
May West we used as pillars.
Yeah. And what was a May West?
It's like a cushion, a fair, round here and round your back, and you tie it together, yeah. And it's cotton wool and stuff. It floats, and that'll hold you up. So we, every morning we'd turn at about sunrise to head north again, and we'd turn in the waves, and a breaker would break right over the deck. And some of the poor fellows were laying there asleep on the deck, and away went their blankets, away went the May Wests, overboard, and they're shaking like drowned rats. I camped in the cabin of my truck every night, got in there and closed the door. And then it got so rough that the vehicles on the hatch, like that, they were starting to slide down, and they would eventually tip sideways against the rails if we didn't. So we had to tie them together, because the seas were so rough. But all the officers were sick, seasick.
This is as you were going to Millen Bay?
Yeah, seasick. There were no toilets, there were no cabins, we had no beds. You just found somewhere to sleep.
Right.
So I was just getting in the front of my truck and sit asleep there.
So if when you wanted to go to the toilet?
We got a bully beef biscuit tin, took all the biscuits out of it, and put a hole in the top and used that as toilet.
Right, and emptied that over the side.
Emptied over the side. We weren't supposed to toss anything overboard that could float in case the Japs found it, because they'd know that we were somewhere around. All the officers, they got seasick and they apologised for not being able to do something to help us. But I didn't get seasick.
Oh.
And as soon as I started to get a bit squirmish, I used to get out of the truck and get up to the front of the boat, get the spray on my face, because it was rising and falling about 20 feet all the time, and there's water used to splash up, and that used to keep me refreshed. If you went down the back of the boat with the smell of the kitchen, that used to turn you off quick.
And the diesel fumes too, they were
really
bad.
Yeah, too right.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you got to Millen Bay, we just pulled in near the wharf, rolled all the drums of petrol off the boat into the water. They floated to the beach, and the natives rolled them up the beach then, and they were put on trucks and taken up into the rubber plantations and the coconut tree plantations, and hid them in there so that the Japs wouldn't see them or anything.
Right.
That's how we unloaded our boat. And then all the bombs and that, they had to be taken off and taken up into storage and...
Once you arrived at Millen Bay, were the Japs still bombing the place every night?
Yeah, they used to come bomb every night. Sometimes we'd get three or four raids a day, three or four raids a night. And you'd just get into bed and on the siren go again. As soon as it used to go, I used to jump out straight away, get my boot, get in the trench. A lot of the other blokes would stay in their bunks until the bombs started to fall. And then go out, we'll see, or till the ack opened up, and then they'd jump out. Well, one night, no one got out, and the bombs fell, and they fell into a Provo camp, two doors from us, and wiped out two tents of Provos.
What's that word?
Provos.
What's that?
Military police.
Oh, okay.
Wiped them out. See, they didn't get out and get in the trenches. They were going to stay in until the bombs started to fall too. And the blokes in our tent They said, Jesus, that was close. They said, you could hear them. And
so the Japs got there before the ACAC opened up?
Yeah, well, the ACAC didn't open up until the planes got closer, see? Yeah. And, but the Americans' planes wouldn't go up to meet them. The Australian planes used to go up and meet them when they were coming in. You get a yellow warning, and then the red was when the raids started to come, but a yellow warning is a warning that the plane's coming. And then we get that warning, that siren goes. Well, the Australian Air Force used to get up in their plane straight away and go out and meet them, shoot them down out at sea. But the Yanks used to go that way and the Japs would come in this way. The Japs would...
The Yanks would go the wrong way.
Yanks would go the wrong way because they were scared, too scared to go and shoot the Japs. But anyway...
Did we shoot many Japanese planes down during those air raids?
Yeah, we shot... I suppose about the best we had was shot down about 50 of them one day.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, well, 100 came over.
Oh, okay. It wasn't enough, was it?
No, 100 came over. And the Lightnings went up, P-38s. They take a long way to turn their twin fuselage plane.
Oh, okay, yes, I know the one.
They're very fast. And they went up and met them. And Kitty Hawks and Cobras and Spitfires, they all went up and went out and shot them down. Well, the day we got the 100 planes, we were there the day. I was out in Mismer Island. We were getting the engines out of the gold mines at Burns Phillips. We were out there getting the engines out. And our spotters are a group of fellas, five or six or so, and they have radios, and they're on different islands to watch and get information through to the base that there's enemy planes coming. And we were great mates with the spotters on Mismer Island, and they told us, the Japs are raiding Milne Bay now. So we listened in on their radios. And they said there's 100 planes there. And a lot of them are shot down now. And we lost, I don't know how many planes that day, 30 or 40 or something, I think. But they come a couple of raids a night. That's the worst part. You just get back to bed and away you'd go again. They got to the stage where they used to follow our planes back after they chased them and shot some of them down and followed them. The Japs would follow our planes back and try to shoot them down and back in Milne Bay.
Right.
Dude.
Are all these air raids part of the Battle of Milne Bay?
Yeah.
This is all part of that battle?
Yeah.
Okay. That's why you always get together in Toowoomba for the Battle of Milne Bay reunion. So this is the Battle of Milne Bay.
Yeah.
How long did that event go for? Was it weeks?
About a week and a half, I think.
And you got there early in it?
No, well, when we got there, it was still going on up the end of the island, Milne Bay. It was still going on. And but the Japs would say, "You there, Corporal Brown?" And somebody would say, "I'm here." Bang. You don't answer because they're starting to find out where Corporal Brown is, whoever he is, and then they'd shoot him.
So hang on. So did the Japs actually get into Milne Bay?
Yeah, they...
Troops?
They came, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they landed with two tanks and a couple of boats and about 100 men or so. They raced their barges up the beach and drove the tanks off. And then as you run your boat up the beach, you drop the anchor. And as soon as you unload your tank, you straight away the winch winds you back into the sea again. And because they were going to take their boats back out to Rabaul again. That's where they came from.
Right.
But our Air Force quickly sank their barges so that they couldn't get away. So we had to refloat those after the war too. and
the barges or the
barges,
right?
And refloated them and used them to run about at Miller Bay.
I didn't realise the Japs got to the southern coast of Papua New Guinea.
Yeah, they got to the easternmost tip. That's Milne Bay. It's a big bay.
Oh, okay.
And they came
okay.
in there, and they wanted to get back here, landed Gilligilly, but it was raining heavily and everything, and they mistook the landing area, and they landed too soon, which was good. It's fast because it gave us a better chance to get at them, and they landed there, and where they landed, it is near where the strip goes up into the scrub for a mile and a half, cleared jungle. And that was what we were making for aeroplanes to land. And so the Japs all got there, lined up on the other side of that, and our blokes and the American machine gunners were all lined up this side. And 3 o'clock one morning, the Japs start yelling and screaming and yahooing and rushing. And they rush straight across this cleared strip, firing their guns. But I think there was 80 or 90 of them got shot there and then just mowed down.
Yeah, it would have been a massacre.
Yeah, a real massacre.
Were you there?
No, I wasn't there then. I think we were still on the water. Anyway, they... some of them would lay doggo amongst the dead ones until our blokes walked in through them, and then they'd hop up with a revolver and shoot our blokes. And that. And there's a bulldozer. It was hot weather, it was near Christmas time, and blowflies were bad, and there's a lot of could be dengue fever or anything. So I used a bulldozer to scoop a couple of whopping big holes, put all the Japs in there and covered it over to stop disease.
Yes, yes.
And so there's a post put in there. This is the southernmost point of Japanese advance. So many Japs buried here.
Right.
I think the Australian government would have notified Japan and they would have sent some people out to get them out of the grave, out of there, take them back to Japan.
After the war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After the war.
So that was the southernmost advance that they made on land?
On land.
Yeah, right.
The two tanks, they got bogged. The town's all real muddy. And one tank got bogged, the other one went to go around it, and he got bogged too. So our boys just jumped up onto the tanks and lifted the hatch and dropped
a
couple of grenades in.
They'll do it.
I think one of the tanks is in Brisbane at the museum.
Yeah.
Would be, I think.
Mephisto was a World War One tank.
I don't know what the name was.
And Mephisto's a German tank that was captured by the Australians.
Yeah, that's right. They got it over in the desert.
Yeah. That's Mephisto. It's used to be in Brisbane. Yeah. I think it's down in Canberra now.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I didn't know there was a tank. Oh, there might be. Were these little tanks, these Japanese tanks, were they only small?
Yeah, they were smaller than those others.
Yeah, I think there might be one in the Brisbane Museum. Yeah they're not like a big, they're not as big as Mephisto.
Not like a General Grant or...
Yeah, a Sherman tank or something like that.
No.
Yeah. No, they're only, because they'd have to come on the barges, so they have to be very small.
Right. Yeah, just fit on the barge, they would.
Okay.
The, what was the American tank, reconnaissance tank? Stuart tank the Americans had. They had them. They're a reconnaissance tank. They do about 60 or 70 kilometres an hour. And the Matilda, that's the Australian tank, it only do about 25. And it is a beautiful, nice, hardy tank, two engines in it, everything. And the old Stuart, though she was... see when I'm coming up the road one day, I was looking down and we see a lot of smoke coming. And here, their tent, their tarp, was on fire. And they'd get up against a coconut tree with a steward and gun it a bit and be, ah, pep, 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 pep. And then it ended up stalling. Wouldn't push the tree over, and they had the aircraft engine. Had they got enough revs, they would have.
But, yeah.
But they were...
Yeah, high rev, low torque.
And yeah, that's yeah. right. A bloke bought a lot of them after the war, the Stuarts, and took the aircraft engine out the back, and he put a couple other motors in, and then he put a blade on them and sold them to people for dozers, clearing scrub and that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were real successful.
Yeah, again, you know, high revs, low torque, I wouldn't think they'd be any good for...
No, once I took those other motors out and put other engines in, I took the aircraft engines out. I took those out and put them in toy cars for kids.
Yes. So, how long were you in Milne Bay?
I should check on my discharge certificate. I don't know.
Months?
Yeah, I was there for more than that. Well, I was overseas for, well, yeah.
So that's the only place you served overseas?
Yeah. Oh, and then I was out Mismar Island, that's still the Pacific Ocean. And then came back from there, yeah, didn't go out again.
I heard a story. I heard Noel said that your mother said, "I hope that Bill never has to shoot anybody. I don't think he would have
the nerve.
The nerve or the personality to do it."
Yeah.
Did you ever have to shoot?
No, I did not.
So you never shot in anger?
No, I never shot in anger. I shot one fellow once, one of my mates. Yeah, air gun.
He shot him in the forehead.
And the bullet went in there.
In the temple.
And he said, "You shot me." I said, "Oh, sorry, mate." I had the gun resting on something and it started to slide down where I had it resting. And, of course, my hand tightened on the trigger. And the bullet went off. And the bullet got in there. And I said, "Oh, God, sorry, Johnny. Sorry. Quick, come on. Down to the doctor's. This is in Toowoomba." So I got him on the back of the motorbike and I'm in a pair of shorts. Away we go down to the hospital. And I said, "I just shot a fellow." I said, "He's got an air rifle slug in his forehead. I just want to get it out." So I took him in and anyway, after he came out, I said, "Did you get the slug?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "Why?" I said, "I wanted a snow knife." He said, "It's mine now." He wouldn't give it to me.
Good on him. I wouldn't give it to you either. Fuck you.
Yeah. And I've seen him years... That happened years ago. I've seen him since, long time since. He's still with a little scar here. Yeah.
Are you glad that you never had to shoot anybody? Are you glad that you never saw live action?
Yeah, too right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's if there was... We've got a little problem with a lot of Japs there. I would have pumped a five or six into a group, but I wouldn't know whether I shot anybody or not.
Yeah.
And a lot of the ammo was tossed out afterwards, and it was laying around up there, and our lads were picking it up and shooting it in their rifles at weekends, go up into the jungle, you know, just a bit of shooting this old ammo away. Now, one of the lads put one in his barrel, pushed the bolt up, pulled the trigger, and the recoil sent the bolt back and broke the top off it, and it came back and hit him in the forehead.
Yeah?
Yeah. It must have been very rusty, and the bullet couldn't get out that way. So, okay, it blew the shell back this way.
Wow. Did it kill him?
No. No, he was all right.
Gave him a headache, I bet.
Yeah, he took two Vincents.
Did he?
Yeah. He took them with confidence.
So, yeah, I'm sure he did. Do you think, like you said, you would have shot into a group? Do you feel that if you had to, if you had to, you would have been able to shoot into a group of
I think I would have been able to. Because when you get talking together and you can hear yabba yabba, it gives you a bit more courage. But, of course, all these Japs that were rushing across the airstrip, they were yelling and rushing and firing bullets. And course, the Americans and the Aussies were doing the same. And how many of our fellows got shot? I forget now. I think it might have been about 70 or... Well, our fellows got shot at Billum Bay. But we're fortunate we had that strip of ground cleared because that they couldn't get right across.
Yeah, yeah. And all the Japanese were killed?
Yeah. I used to find some amongst the jungle later, though, dead. They'd kill themselves. Harikari.
Yeah.
In Germany, at the desert, used to get quite friendly. Like the German line was only a couple of chain, and then the English line or the Australian line. And at night time, they'd hear the Germans singing Lily Marlene, and they'd start singing Waltzing Matilda. And anyway, they got friendly, and they'd join, and they'd, at Christmas time, they'd join and share a beer with them. Now they get back into their own lines before their officers knew. Because after all, they didn't want to fight either.
No. No, it's insane, isn't it?
It's bloody crook. It's the blokes up the top, the government. It's crook.
You went in 41? 42.
16th of February 1942, I joined the army. And the 14th of February 1942, the Australians and the others surrendered at...
Singapore?
Hey?
Singapore?
Yeah, Singapore. 2 days after that, the Japs raided Townsville. And I says to myself, what is it doing the bloody army for?
So after that, the Battle of Milne Bay, did you just stay in Milne Bay for the duration of the war?
Yeah, we came back to we were in Toowoomba when peace was signed. We had base in Toowoomba. Came back to Toowoomba and we were at the workshops that morning working and somebody said, peace, peace, peace. And I said, the Japs have surrendered. So down tools and the band struck up and we marched down to the parade ground and singing all the way down there and dismissed and go downtown on leave. Whatever you want to do, but whatever you do, just behave yourselves. So we did that and went downtown and people everywhere. Holy hell, it was a happy town here. People sitting up on the window sills on windows at banks, you know, waving to people and that, and sitting up there. If you want, you get smothered with kisses there that day, because people racing around everywhere. It was a great feeling. So then I stayed in the army for, I don't know, for how long after that, before I came out. You had to wait for discharge time because they did it through alphabetical order. Arthur was discharged before Daniel was discharged, alphabetical.
Right. Mm. And our name's about halfway through the alphabet.
Yeah, that's right.
You wouldn't want to be Zimmerman, would you?
No, that's right. But in the workshops in Toowoomba, it was good. Working there, I was in charge of about 20 blokes and we had a big section of workshop. We had trucks and cars and a lot of the cars were came back from the army then and Pontiacs, Buicks, Oldsmobiles, they're all painted green because they all went through the strip paint machine and then they came out beautiful and they were sold to private people then. But one Easter, we went away, Good Friday, came back on the Monday. Good Friday, when we closed shop, I had one truck pulled apart there, had the engine out of it, gearbox out of it, diff out of it, and had new ones there to go in. Monday we came back, they were all gone. The engine's gone, gearbox was gone, the diff was gone. And who got it, I don't know. I think it's some officers. got that.
Came and nicked it.
Yeah. And then the next Easter, I think it was, I might have went again. Oh, yeah. You remember? Petrol? Well, we'd when you're on guard duty, some of the fellas would say, are you on guard duty? He said, I've got a tin of petrol I want to get out. All right. I said, where do you want it put? Under the fence up near such and such. So I'd get the petrol and take it up there and slide it under the fence. Gingerly, never ever got caught. But then towards the last, the army got on it that they suspected people were taking petrol from the army. So that they came and raided the motorbikes the afternoon as they used to go from the camp back to town. And they used to take a sample of petrol out of the petrol tank to find out if it had the chemical in it or not. And if it had the chemical in it, it was army petrol.
Ah, see. A bit of dye or something in the petrol.
Yeah, it's a dye in the petrol. And they wouldn't ride their bike away that night.
So let me just get it clear. You did your training, you did your trip up the coast, you went to Milne Bay, you saw time in Milne Bay, and then you came back from Milne Bay before the end of the war to Toowoomba.
Yeah.
And then you saw the end of the war in Toowoomba.
Yeah.
And 18 months or so after the war.
Yeah. It would have been, on the discharge paper, I suppose.
How do you look back on your time in the military?
Well, I looked back on it as a good experience.
Yeah.
Not regretful at all. But there's one fella, we used to call him the Whinger. And he's all the time going crook about, bloody army, he says, sooner I get out of this, the better. But he's whinging all the time about the army. I said, look, make the best of it. No, I don't want to make the best of it. Well, I said, you're in it till they let you out, so you may as well try to enjoy it. And some of them would, and a lot of them wouldn't. Mm. But a lot of them used to make our own beer. Get a biscuit tin, put it under the bed, put orange essence, lemon essence, and bananas, anything in it. Well, then let it ferment. Leave it under there. And every now and then dip a bit out and just taste it. Toss some sugar into it, put more sugar in. Get sugar sent up from home. I used to make this jungle juice. And the Japs, the Yanks, got too impatient. They used to take the alcohol out of the torpedoes.
What was the alcohol in the torpedoes for?
To make them go off.
Right, it was a primer charge or something like that, was it?
Primer charge. Yeah.
Okay. They used to pull the alcohol out and drink it.
That's the alcohol out. And then they'd die too. Quite a few of them died from that.
From it? Yeah, from the alcohol.
Yeah.
Well, this is probably methanol.
Yes, yeah, methanol.
Yeah, right.
Methanol. And Georgie Dan, a mate of mine, he brought a gallon of methanol back from the Air Force with him. And he had a bit of a party in Dalby one night. He said, come in, Bill, I'm having a bit of a party. So I went in and he got eggs and mixed up in it too, made creme de menthe or something or other. And I said, no, I don't want any of that, mate. I said, I'll just have a little taste. And that was it. That was enough. But they got drunk on it. It's pure alcohol.
Methanol will kill you.
Yeah.
Ethanol's okay, you just get drunk.
Mm.
But methanol will hurt you bad.
Yeah, a lot of Yanks in New Guinea, they died from it.
And it's
drinking it out of the torpedoes.
Mm.
And they're wondering why the torpedoes don't go off and hit the ship.
Mm, they'll do it. Yeah, so all up, the war was a good experience. Well,
yeah, I didn't mind at all.
Yeah.
I didn't wind about it. I didn't regret it. You go home on leave, and I used to write to about a dozen different people, about eight of them were Sheilas. And when the mail had come in, it might come in once a month, and you get a great stack of mail. So you have a look at which one came. Oh, yeah. So you read them out and read them as they come in to find out who's who and everything. Yeah, yes. And you write and you get newsletters and some would say, I'll write to you at the weekend. And comes the weekend, you think, oh, well, I should get a letter probably this week. It doesn't turn up. So you wonder why. It might have got sunk on a boat. My Christmas cake went down on the boat.
Did it?
Yeah. And a pair of glasses and a mouth organ. The Bible was sending to me. Lloyd, it went down the boat. And a pair of glasses, that's right, the fish were wearing them, I think. Yeah, the Christmas cake was all wrapped up in tea towel and sewn and everything. It wasn't worth eating. The Japs, they came in one night to do some shelling, and they said, shift the hospital ship or we'll sink it. We had a hospital ship, Ananda was there in Milne Bay. And they said, shift the hospital ship or we'll sink it. So we just had to shift it away. Because I suppose they thought, well, we sunk the one on the Australian coastline, so we don't do it again.
The centre?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, in all things considered, that was decent of them, wasn't it? They could have just tried to bomb around it, and if it got accidentally hit,
yeah,
bad luck.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and it was a good chance it would have got accidentally hit.
Yeah.
But to actually say move it was actually respectful of the rules of war.
That's right.
Did you have girlfriends during this time?
Yeah, I had about five, I suppose. Five, 6 months to write to all the time, and I'd get letters from them, and I had one or two pretty serious ones before I went. One said, when I come back, if she wanted to, she'd marry me. But when I got away, her mother made her marry this other fella, so that buggered that.
Mm.
I got still a photo there somewhere.
Oh, yeah?
She was an old big girl. She met me, as a matter of fact, when I landed back in Brisbane, when I came from Milne Bay. I don't know how I got the message to her that I was coming out or what, but anyway, I got off the train at the railway station, looking around, couldn't see her anywhere, and I thought, oh, she's not coming. So I walked down to the gate, and there she was waiting at the gate.
What's her name?
Haverall.
What's her first name?
Geraldine. And I got a photo of her somewhere. Anyway, she joined the WAFs, you know, when I joined the army. She joined the WAFs to get away from her boyfriend. Yes, she was very good, very punctual with her letters and that. She was a great friend of Mum's too. And there's another one I used to go with. I caught up with her again in Sydney. I just kept in touch with them, see? Anyway, we met down there on Coogee Beach one night. And I missed my bloody train back to the camp. So we out on the road, and on comes army trucks, and they pull up and pick you up and take me back to camp.
What were you doing in Sydney?
I was in camp down there then, at Sydney Showgrounds.
Moore Park?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
And, anyway, I had leave this night and went out to Coogee Beach, and met this lass. She was a Dolby lass too. And, oh dear, that was lovely.
Long time ago.
Yeah. Years have gone by.
My, how she grew.
I liked her looks when I carried her books in Kalamazoo.
Talking about drinking and smoking, you said in your notes that you were 20 years old when you joined the military, and you hadn't had a drink or a smoke up to then. That was back in the days of 21. This is a drinking age, wasn't it? Did you?
I think it was.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but you decided, well, if you're in the military, you're old enough to drink and smoke.
Yeah, but I didn't drink or smoke until I was in New Guinea.
Oh, okay.
Up there.
Why? Why did you choose to drink and smoke? Because you're not naturally inclined to it.
No. In the trenches with the mosquitoes, you puffed a cigarette, get them out, and usually The natives had beat into the slit trenches too. They used to dive into our slit trenches. But I didn't drink. Oh, we used to get a beer ration every, oh hell, I don't know, one or two bottles every 3 months or something up there. And I used to just give mine to someone else.
Right.
Because I just didn't like beer. I still don't like beer. And then, as I said, when I came home, I said one day, one night, at Billowheeler, where are we now? Billowheeler? Yeah, downtown. I said, this is my last cigarette. I want you all to note, oh, this is my last cigarette. And I tossed it away. And I haven't had another cigarette since.
So you would...
It never ever got me.
How long after your time in the army was that you gave up smoking?
Oh, about 6 months, I suppose.
Okay, not long. Yeah. Yeah. And did you just smoke in the army because everybody smoked? And
yeah, more or less, in boredom. And we used to play football. We had no football, so we used to use coconuts.
Right. They don't...
And they were hard to kick.
Yeah, they wouldn't bounce very well, would they?
No, they didn't bounce. My feet are still sore from kicking them.
Well, I notice that you're sort of hobbling a little bit. Yeah, it must be.
Yeah.
Did you find that smoking settled your nerves during the air raids?
No, made it worse.
Did it?
Yeah.
Like coffee does?
Yeah, it made me. It never affected me much, but I used to. Didn't like smoking. No,
it never got you, eh?
No. But you see, I was mates and that. Look, you got a cigarette. I'll die soon if I don't have a cigarette. You know, that's a silly statement to make.
Well, that's how it feels.
Hey?
What did you do with your cigarettes and your beer ration? Did you give it away?
Yeah.
So you would have been a popular man.
Yeah, when the two-up was on in New Guinea too. I didn't bet, but I lost a lot of money lending to people.
Why did you lend to people?
Well, they wanted a loan. They'd run out of money. In the two-up games, Bill, can you lend me 20, 30 quid? Yeah. I said, all right, when you pay me? He said, I'll pay you payday. But that payday's never come yet.
No.
From a lot of them.
How much do you lose, do you think?
Oh, it'd be probably about $1,000, I suppose.
£1,000?
Yeah, £1,000.
Wow. That's a lot of money back in those days.
I wore a money belt all the time. And I used to have money stuffed in the zip. I used to sleep with that money belt on too. Not as more comfortable, but I knew where the money was.
Mm. How did they pay you in the military? When you were in New Guinea, how did you actually get paid?
Well, payday was on a Friday, I think, and we used to sign the book. I used to say to the officer, I used to say, do you want to take your money, Bill? No, leave it in the book. And they just leave it bank up, until we come home and leave, and then you get your money, you draw your money.
Okay. Or if you wanted to, you could take your money.
Take some money up there, go to the canteen and buy some soft drinks or some hair grease or some.
And was there much to buy in New Guinea? Or was most of it supplied?
No. You go to the canteen, you can buy. And then a bakery started up in New Guinea at Milne Bay. And happening, one of my cousins was the baker. I used to go down and visit him quite a bit. Sneak home with a loaf of bread.
What was his name?
Oh, what was it? Hubie Jones, I think. We'd make a little fire and toast it and make something. A cup of tea before you go to bed.
The money that you had in your money belt was just the little bit of money that you took from time to time.
Yeah.
Out of your pay.
Yeah.
And then the other soldiers would hit you up for a loan.
Yeah. Oh, yes, they did all right.
So by the time the war was over, you must have had a nice nest egg tucked away.
Well, you got deferred pay also. That amounted to two bob a day, I think it was, from the day you went in.
Right.
That banked up all the time.
And you didn't have access to that until you finished?
365 days in a year.
Yep.
Two bob a day, it banks out, it amounts.
And you could only get that when you finished?
Yeah, when you come out.
Right.
That was more or less made sure we had some money when we came here. Had the deferred pay.
Before we leave the military again, told me the story about when you were on the island.
Yeah.
And getting machinery.
Well, we were chortling along in the boat, heading back to Milne Bay, and we just see a ship coming over the horizon. And the captain said, "What's wrong with those bloody blokes in that boat? Can't they read signals?" And I could see our light signal, I could see his light signal, and I could see the flags, and they would have been away about 5 miles. Our officer, our boat captain, kept signalling that we were taking natives back to Milne Bay. He didn't seem to believe our story, and they kept coming together. So we were about from here to over the road part and got the halos going. And they asked what we were doing. From Miss Morale, we had prisoners on board. They were cannibals. They had been eating the missionaries on the islands and that. So they eventually let us go. And that's when I said, I heard a noise behind us, splash, and I looked around, and here's a submarine sitting there with its gun pointing at us too. And on the other boat, they all had their steel helmets on, all had their rifles with them. What they were going to do with us? Ours was only a small boat. We had about, suppose we had a fair bit tonnage of equipment on, engines out of the mines. We got those out of the cement, loaded them onto the boat, and six-cylinder lifters, I think they were. And they were cemented in well. We had to dig down beside them, put a quarter of a plug of dynamite in each one, and put one long fuse on and light it, and then run for your coit. And then you hear a bang, and you go back and have a look, and the whole thing would be out of the cement.
Right, and just blow the concrete away from the, from the basement.
And
you couldn't do that nowadays, but no. That's the military World War II way of doing things, isn't it? Use high explosives.
And that's when we used to do fishing too. We'd toss a grenade into the water, and up would come the fish. And natives would dive in and get the big ones for us, and we used to let them have the little ones.
Was that a good way to fish? Did it work well?
Yeah, well, you couldn't get fine bait anywhere, but you could just fire a 303 rifle into the water and you get a lot of small fish. Natives like them. They dive in and they take reeds off reeds plant then, and they'd thread the fish onto the reeds up through the gills and out the mouth.
Ah.
And they'd end up with the great strings of fish. Okay. Yeah.
And a 303 round going into the water would just create enough of a shock wave to kill the fish in that, well, stun the fish in that area. In that area. Okay. And what happened to the cannibals when you got them back to Milne Bay?
I don't know. We had to just take them back, and military police took over then, I suppose.
Yeah, right. They probably would have been tried and hung, wouldn't they?
Yes, I do not know. I just don't know what the outcome would have been. They might have been.
What was the name of the island that you came from?
Misimer.
How do you spell that?
M-I-S-I-M-I.
Misimer Island.
Okay. And that is due east of Milne Bay, towards the Solomons.
Okay. Very far?
No, but I couldn't swim it.
Right. But you're like 100 miles that far, or more like?
Well, we set off. Yeah, it would be about 100 miles, I suppose.
Okay.
We set off going out to Misimer in the afternoon. We got there early in the morning, I think. We went all night. Then it rained like hell. We got down in the holds under the, because we had no real shelter. Used to take natives, good natives, up with us, and while we get the engines out and all that. At the road was 200 inches a year. The roads were very, very loose on the edges, and we had a lot of equipment on the back of one of the Marmon Harrington trucks. Marmon Harrington is 8-wheel drive. And coming down slowly, got over the edge, away she went, down to the bottom. So we took a rope down, put around it, and the truck, and around a capstan on another Marmon Harrington up the top, and set it going. And we got a ride up to the top again. We broke the rope and away it went again, so we left it there. And it's probably still there.
Well, yeah. A couple of bits of steel are still there now.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. You could walk into the mines, into the drives. You walk in, there's water dripping all the time. So we didn't loiter around in there. Yeah, it was a cyaniding process. The crushers were there that crushed up the ore, and the gold and the zinc all went in together then. Yeah, it wasn't a bad little break away from Milne Bay.
How long did that take to get those parts?
I don't know. We were out there about 2 or 3 months, I suppose.
Oh, that long?
Yeah.
Quite a long time.
Mm.
Okay. And you were living in the...
Doctor's house.
Doctor's house, so that would have been quite comfortable, wouldn't it?
They didn't deliver mail to us there, though. Until I got back to Milne Bay to get my mail. Yes, it was. It was quite comfortable. I can't remember now. I think there were sheets on the beds and that. We had blankets anyway.
And showers and a kitchen and...
Showers and everything.
How many of you went over?
I think it was about 30 of us.
Oh, okay.
Some of the reinforcements and the sergeant in charge. Some of the reinforcements and I don't think we took any native boys with us. We got them when we got out there to help load the stuff.
What was the life in Milne Bay like? You were there for a long time, there were no women, no white women.
But they were getting whiter every day, I'll tell you now.
The black women were getting whiter every day?
And
did any of the boys get
on?
Yeah,
one of the boys was getting amongst them. Yeah, and you see him at night time checking to see if he didn't have a discharge from his penis, see if he didn't catch it or anything.
Goodness.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad life there. It was good, really. And plenty of fruit. Bananas and pawpaws and mangoes.
While you were there, you asked to be transferred to the Philippines. You joined the AIF, is that
when
right?
I came back to Toowoomba, I was already in the AIF. I wanted to transfer to the Philippines to go there then. Anyway, we were forming a unit to go back to Milne Bay, I think, as a light aid detachment. Breakdown wagons, going back and just picking up the machinery and that and bringing it into the workshops. But anyway, the war finished then. I wanted to go to the Philippines just to see that country. But from what I heard about later, I'm glad I didn't.
What did you hear?
Oh, there's a hell of a lot of our boys were killed there by the Japs. March so many hours, so many days to march right across the island because they said they didn't have enough feed to feed them, so just let them wander around by themselves because the Japs were becoming cannibals themselves, eating some of their own, and they'd eat some of the Aussies and some of the other natives.
Even though the war ended, and that would have been a very good day, at the time, were you a bit sad that the war ended and you didn't go to the Philippines, or were you just glad the war was over?
I was glad the war was over. And then we asked the office, the orderly room, when we were going to be discharged from the army. And they said, well, it'll be alphabetical order. So the A and the B's and first. And so... eventually came around to ours and went home then. When I got out, I wanted to get home straight away that day.